Just, this is really compelling. We should use this part for the show.
Oh, no question.
The suspense, it's just fantastic.
Will he be able to figure it out? Tune in next time.
Yeah. Welcome to episode 7. Is it 17, isn't it, Adam?
I think it's 17. Ryan Kessler.
Actually, 17, Ryan Kessler of the Vancouver Canucks. Yeah. Today we have a very special show. We have a honorary third hoser for today.
So, hello, everybody.
That's Don. That voice you hear there is Don. I'm going to go ahead and mispronounce your name probably. Don Komarechka, former heavyweight champion.
Actually, you got it right. I'm surprised.
I was going to say Komenich. Didn't you participate in the 1976 Olympics?
I don't think I was born then.
Oh, okay. Oh. So another Komenich.
I wrote down Komarchenko. I actually did, and then crossed it out because I was like, oh, that can't be right.
Again, you're close, and I've been called worse, so, I mean, that would have been fine.
Yeah. So it is Don Komarechka?
That's perfect, yeah.
Awesome. And we also have Adam on the line.
Hello.
All the way from Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah.
This is Alan from Tübingen, Germany. And Don, where are you coming from tonight?
Barrie, Ontario.
I've heard of it.
Heard of it?
Yeah. So before I've been to it. And?
Even better.
It's not that exciting.
Not really, no.
Collingwood, home of Blue Mountain.
Yeah, Collingwood's kind of nice. Yes. That's about an hour or so from here.
Yeah. Barrie's got what's the junior A team there? The Barrie Bulls? No. Barrie Colts.
Yes, Colts.
Junior hockey team, yeah.
Also former WWF wrestler Barrie O. No relation.
Sure, why not?
You might want to Google him, Don. He was he was big.
Do you know what his actual name is? This is where my wrestling trivia really comes in handy. His name was Barrie Horowitz.
Really?
Yeah.
And he went with Barrie O. He used to stand in the middle of the ring and put his arms over his head, touch his fingers together.
You know what? No, I know. Actually, that wasn't Barrie Horowitz. Barrie Horowitz was a different guy that used to get beat up by everyone else. But Barrie O was one of those guys like Iron Mike Sharp that they threw in because people recognized his name, but he just got thrashed every week.
You know how much money I lost betting on Tiger Chung Lee?
Iron Mike Sharp, what do they call him? Canada's greatest athlete.
Oh, wow.
Let's do a wrestling podcast.
What does this have to do? Yeah, wrestling. The Two Hosers Wrestling Show. So, anyway, Don, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, what is there to say? I started into photography, let's say, about 4 years ago or so. And I have been pursuing it professionally for about a year. And I excel, if I can toot my own horn, at macro photography, nature and landscape stuff. I teach it at the local college here, and I don't even know where to start. Vice president of the local photo club. I got a book out that I released earlier this year, being published later on in this year. So things are kind of ramping up for me, and I'm quite happy about it.
No, I meant, do you like wrestling?
Oh, I hate wrestling.
What's your book called, Don?
The Universe as I See It.
All right.
Nice.
Well, that's the name of my blog as well, so just sort of carried that through.
Fantastic. People can find that at...
My website, which is doncom.ca. Any way you spell it should get you there.
Okay.
Do you get a lot of people to your website thinking that they're trying to look for Donkey Kong?
Not yet, although this might happen now.
Okay. So you can't actually play Donkey Kong on your website.
You can't, no. But that was a childhood nickname of mine.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll cross that off my list of questions, Adam.
Okay.
That was number one. So, so today we're actually, just to give you people a heads up, last week was the beginning of a Flash tutorial. That we will get back to, and it's going to be a long kind of theme interwoven into our show, because Flash isn't easy. That's that P. Diddy song, Flash Ain't Easy. But for right now, we had an opportunity to talk about macro photography. Don got in touch and was kind enough to offer his input on macro today, and I obviously jumped at it because I have a little bit of experience myself, but not too much, so I'm interested in learning myself. And we've actually had a few questions about macro photography, so this works perfectly. So we got.
Okay. I'm happy to be here.
Fantastic, especially at midnight on a now Tuesday for you, right?
Well, it's all right. I mean, it was election night anyhow, so I was staying up tonight.
So you're amped.
I'm amped, full of energy.
Super.
Isn't there an energy drink called amped?
There should
I think
be.
There is, yeah.
There isn't one called election night, that's for sure. not yet. Anyway, I'm going to market that. So yeah, Don, I looked at a lot of your, most of your website. Your pictures are fantastic.
And, I appreciate that.
I also enjoyed them.
Yeah, they're great. Better than, I would say, you know, obviously better than most people taking pictures. And I find that it is for the people who are pros and taking a lot of good photos, it's easy to get lost in a pack of awesome. because there is that at the upper level, there's a lot of people taking good pictures.
A little fish in a big pond.
It's, yeah. It is like that, exactly, but you seem really motivated, and hustle is the key, I think.
You have to get out there. You've got to pound the pavement. You've got to building your brand is one of the hardest things to do as an up-and-coming photographer, and to be honest, I spend more time trying to sell pictures and trying to make a name for myself than I actually do taking pictures. I hope that'll change at some point, but right now that's sort of the game to play.
So far, so good, as far as I can tell. I'll be honest, when you got in touch and I checked out your website, I hadn't seen the picture of you on the site, and I'm looking at it thinking, okay, I'm going to phone up and talk to some guy in his mid-40s. And no, you're a lot younger than that, aren't you?
I'm 24.
There you go. A go-getter. Awesome.
Yeah.
Really throwing off the curve, Don.
Sorry about that. I'll gain a couple of years.
I'm going to talk to the union and get you to slow down a little bit. So, let's move into the photo challenge for last week. Don participated. He read my mind and entered his photo before I even asked him. So that's great.
I go get her.
And again, there you go. Doesn't sit around waiting for instructions.
I looked at his picture in advance, and my first thought was, Barry doesn't look like that, Don. So there's that.
Yeah, you're right. you know, that sign is probably the nicest thing in Barry. And to be honest with you, all the paint is chipping on it. And, you know, the sunset normally doesn't look that nice. And there's lots of twigs and stuff in the way, too. So I had to play with it a little bit in Photoshop to pretty it up.
Never spoil a story by telling the truth.
Well... It's a hard thing to believe. You know, anybody that sees that sign is going to question it. So I might as well just be honest.
I could honestly see buying myself a plane ticket to Barry just to go see that.
You would be sorely disappointed.
Oh, wow. I think we just lost our Barry subscribers.
Well, also, Barry doesn't have an airport, so.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
Wow. Okay. Well, the inspiration for that photo challenge is like when I travel anywhere, I frequently shoot signs. I shoot a lot of signs, even with film, even though with digital it's, you know, essentially a free photo now. But when I'm gonna make my photo album, I'm always kind of thinking about getting establishing shots, because I come from, my background is film and filmmaking, and that's kind of how I approach a scene when I go to shoot a scene before I edit it. Like to shoot a wide shot or some sort of establishing shot before the scene begins to get the viewer in. And I actually do that with my photo albums as well, because it's an easy way to tell people, great, I'm in at Juno Beach, for instance. Rather than explain it to someone, you can just show them the Juno Beach sign. I also have a weird fascination with font style and size of signs and how much effort goes into the design of a sign. Not every sign, but a lot of signs. It's just a weird little thing, quirk that I have. And so I wanted to do a photo challenge based around trying to make a sign look good.
And that's quite a challenge.
It is a challenge. It because a sign can oftentimes just be a sign. So that's what we're designed to do, is get people thinking about taking their own establishing shots and thinking about how that can apply. So who wants to go first?
Well, I think we've been talking about Don, so I think we should maybe look at Don's first.
I think that's only reasonable. So,
sure.
You'd think I'd have him loaded up on the screen, but... Mm-hmm.
This time I'm actually ready. I pre-put them all in one preview window so I could go from one to the next. Pretty smart, eh?
That's pretty good. So why don't you
and
start?
I'm just doing that myself.
What do you got for us, Adam?
Well, I looked at his picture, and I saw it a few days ago, and my first thought was, what are the chances that he got a sky to look that awesome in the few days since our podcast came out? I just thought, no way. So I want to know, is this legitimate or not? Or sounds like you did a little bit of work on this. Or was this pre-taken before the photo challenge?
Okay, well, Adam sort of gets me there a little bit. It was pre-taken, but not by very much. It was taken... what was that, last Saturday? So that would have been...
Just before, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been like the day before you recorded.
Like we right. said, Adam, he's a go-getter, so...
Yeah, one step ahead.
Yeah.
Psychic. You know, the reason why I had taken this photo was one of the local phone books had asked me, hey, do you have any photos of the Welcome to Barrie sign? And I said, absolutely, just give me a couple of weeks. And I went out and I decided, you know, I didn't have the equipment to do it. So I rented a lens to take the shot. Canon has an extremely wide angle lens, a 14 millimeter lens. And I decided that that was my ticket. And I rented it and I had it for a week and I was waiting and waiting. And it just, the weather just didn't cooperate with me. It was raining for most of that week. And one evening, the clouds started to break up a little bit, and the sun was starting to peek through, and I said, you know, this is my chance. So I raced across town, racing the sun, and found a place to park, which is pretty hard in that area of town, because there's nothing there except for highways. And sort of ran across some, I guess it would be the on-ramps, which I probably shouldn't have been there, because this little sign is in an island. And started snapping away.
Nice. Well, you went at the right time of day for sure.
Yeah, and you know, from the ground level, you can't really see any of the horizon because it's sort of up on a hill.
Okay.
So what I had to do was throw my camera on my tripod and extend my tripod as tall as it could be, mm-hmm. and then hold it up above my head as tall as I could hold it, and then take the shot. And again, I was kind of disappointed because this is in pretty dark shadow, and I could either have the sign properly exposed or the sky properly exposed and not both. So I held my breath and tried my luck to do an HDR shot of the sign, keeping things as still as possible while holding it up in the, well, I think we had quite a breeze that night too, so it wasn't quite that easy.
Nice. So this is HDR. I didn't notice it right away.
It is an HDR, and I didn't make it surreal. I just wanted to sort of level things out. I mean, I could have done that in camera if I had, you know, some graduated neutral density filters and some fancy equipment, but I figured just taking three exposures and muddling around in Photoshop would get me there, too. And
not to rip on anybody who does HDR.
Wait. Just let me ask the question before you go any further. What is HDR?
There you go.
Aha. So...
Go ahead.
Did you want me to go into that?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, HDR is, the term stands for high dynamic range. And basically what you're doing is you're taking the camera and extending its what it can normally see within one shot, more towards what the human eye can see. The human eye has a much greater dynamic range than what a camera has. And to go even farther, a computer screen has even less than a camera, and a print has even less than a computer screen. So you're constantly going down the scale.
Right.
When you've got a scene that has extremely bright highlights and extremely dark shadows, your camera's just going to make the brights completely white and the darks completely black. You can't get it all in one shot. So with high dynamic range photography, HDR, you take three exposures or more, and you get one that's underexposed, one that's normally exposed and one that's overexposed. Okay. Or you can bracket even further out beyond that. And that'll allow you to have detail in the shadows and detail in the highlights once you process it all together.
Oh.
Normally, it's the kind of thing that, now, this is not to denigrate HDR photography. Normally, it's not for me. Because normally people...
I've heard the term clown puke used before, and that's I think that's pretty adequate for describing a lot of HDR out there.
It is. It's a lot of people run with it and make it HDR, which is absolutely fine. I you know, it's just not for me. It's not my personal preference. I like HDR in this case when you don't immediately know that it's HDR. Like this looks like it could be a real picture. Like you got really lucky with some light. And you went at the right time and got lucky. So this isn't really in your face.
Exactly. I made it look like I saw it, and that's my only goal.
Exactly. So mission accomplished. It looks great.
Yeah.
So.
You win.
Well, I don't know. It is pretty advanced stuff. It's. I've done a little bit of HDR myself, not a whole lot. And so... I would say it's a fairly advanced technique. How did you, first of all, essentially it's a handheld shot if you're holding the tripod above your head.
Exactly.
How did you get three shots without moving the camera?
Well, they did move. And the magic of Photoshop has the ability to automatically align layers.
Okay.
I don't know which version they introduced this in, but it can be done separately from blending things together. So I can just align them. And then save the images back out so that I could load them into an HDR program. Typically, you use a different program to do HDR photography. I used Photomatix for this one. And so I aligned them in Photoshop. I ran them through Photomatix and then brought them back into Photoshop to touch it up.
Super.
So how long did that take you start to finish from once you took the pictures to do all that that aftermath?
Oh, man, I don't even know. If you see... In the foreground, there's all sorts of little... I think they're daffodils, but they haven't started blooming yet. There's reeds on the left and the right of the sign, like tall yellow grass.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, because we've had a lot of wind lately, had broken off, and all the twigs of that grass were sort of strewn about all the daffodils.
Right.
And I painstakingly went through and edited each one out.
Oh, jeez.
So that took probably about an hour and a half just doing that. Basic touch-ups on the sign. Like I said, the sign, I don't think it's been painted this year or maybe not even last year, and there's a lot of chipping paint and stuff that's missing on it. The concrete base is sort of stained over time. So I had to go in and touch all of that stuff up too using the heal tools and the clone tools in Photoshop. So a lot of it was just monotonous busy work. I think I was on the phone with my grandmother at the time, and you know, an hour and a half goes by and I finished editing. So I'd say in total about 2 hours.
How's your grandma?
She's great.
Yeah, does she like wrestling?
She doesn't.
I meant watching wrestling, otherwise it got kind of creepy there.
All right, how about yours, Al, your picture?
Okay, well, I was going to get, compared to Don's, I scribbled mine on a piece of paper with a crayon.
Does Don have our pictures?
I do. I have them right in front of me. Yeah.
He actually had them last week before we took them.
Yeah. Yeah. I had sketches, and then you filled it in perfectly. So.
I like to stay within the lines.
Yeah.
Okay, mine I took in the train station is... I had forgotten. First of all, I had this shot in mind all week. Once I knew I was going to go out and take a shot of the sign, I wanted to shoot this sign. The Ausgang und Gleis 1 und 13. That's what that means, by the way.
That's like one of the only German words I know. Ausgang.
Ausgang. Well, Gleis is more important. That's track. But Ausgang.
Yeah, I don't know that one yet. Yeah. Well, I do now.
There you go. Yeah, it means exit. And tracks 1 and 13. So that's how you find your way around the Bahnhof. Anyway, I wanted to take that sign, and so I even took my GorillaPod with me because I knew I wanted to do something else within the shot. I wanted to have it be like about a one-second exposure so I can get some people kind of blurry, you know, in motion.
I was wondering what your exposure was, and you were clever enough to strip your EXIF data out of the photos you sent me, so I couldn't peek.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't. It wasn't on purpose. I never thought of it that way. I think I probably have it set that way by accident. But yeah, the exposure was it was a 1 second exposure to try to get blur. Ironically, when I didn't want to shoot anybody coming down the stairs because I was getting a lot of strange looks standing in the train station. And so I wanted to get people going up the stairs so that we couldn't see their faces. And a couple of my test shots were of people coming down, which actually required about a half a second exposure just because people seemed to be moving downstairs faster than people moving upstairs.
Yes, so gravity.
I think gravity plays a big part, so we'll blame Isaac Newton.
Yeah.
So that was the shot I went to get. Once I shot this, I remembered that I had shot my big mouth off and said I was going to take a series of three pictures. So I went and shot that anyway, just so that Adam couldn't rip on me. But this is the one I like better, myself.
Now, Alan, I'm curious. Why did you take it on a slight angle like you did?
I wish there was a more complex answer than I wanted to make it a little more interesting.
It makes it feel a little bit more alive. If it was just straight lines, I'd feel like, oh, well, that's kind of boring. It gives me a little bit of an uneasy feeling. And I don't know, I kind of like that for the context of the photo.
Super. Yeah, part of it was just to the right, there was another billboard just past the number 13. And I wanted to kind of cut that out the best I could. And sort of the angle in the place dictated that I couldn't take it straight on because there was some construction from straight on. And
right.
From off to the side, I would have had to include the little advertising billboard, like similar to the one you see on the left, but far uglier.
Well, what is that one on the left? I can't quite read the words on it.
Oh, I'm not sure. It's some ad for something.
Yeah, okay.
Cheese or beer, I don't know, whatever they advertise in Germany.
Both good things.
Yeah.
And why the black and white?
I just, the colors in there are no scream in hell in the train station. I took it in black and white the whole time. I did take it in raw, so I could do it in color if I wanted, but I set my camera to shoot in black and white so that my preview came up in black and white. And I just envisioned it in black and white.
I think that in black and white, my eyes focus on a lot of the lines more. If there was color in there in little pockets in the photo, I think that would be distracting from those lines. So I think it works well this way.
Also, it's a real mix. The light you see on the left side is actually sunlight coming in, and the light on the right side is some kind of a fluorescent. So the mix would have been awful.
That would have been ugly, yeah.
Yeah.
My first thought was artsy. No, you know what I honestly thought looking at it is I like the effect and all, but I wish there was about 30 people on those stairs instead of two.
Yes.
Like, I think the blurring effect would have, in my visual of what it would like if there's look like if there's more people, I think I was hoping there would be more people in the picture.
I wish I could argue with you, Adam, but that was my plan, was to get a bunch of people. Except here's the rub. I eventually got tired of waiting. I took this picture and I sat there for probably 30 minutes before I went home and said, okay, that's it. I'm using the two people. Because the problem is, and in my defense, on the right-hand side, there's actually stairs as well. So like the stairs that go up both sides.
Right.
And when a train would come in and a large crowd of people would basically come in and turn left and go up the stairs, an equal number of people would turn to the right and walk right in front of me and stare directly into the camera.
Lovely.
Yeah, so, and it's kind of a weird thing. No one really minds, but, you know, since 9/11, people started to mind about taking pictures in weird in train stations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Way worse in London, that's for sure.
What's that little conveyor belt on the side of the stairs there? We don't have those here.
Oh, that is very, very German. It's an automatic luggage thing. You basically, if you want to take your luggage up, you place that on a walk next to your luggage so you don't have to carry it up the stairs.
Oh, wow. That's so lazy. I wish we had that here.
And to go even further, it doesn't just run because they're very green here. It's pressure sensitive. So as soon as it feels the pressure of your suitcase, then it starts running.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure children get hurt on those.
They don't seem to worry about the sort of thing over here in Germany. Yeah. So, there you go.
Smarter kids over there, maybe.
So, let's get my other one out of the way real quick, because I'm going to put it on the website. After I shot my mouth off, I decided to go out and shoot my series of three that I talked about. And rather than just... And it was a really terrible time of day, like harsh shadows. It wasn't the worst time of day, but it was probably, I forget now, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Not the greatest time. Not magic hour. So I decided I wanted to shoot a couple signs that offered shadows. That the signs themselves cast shadows, and that was kind of the series I went for. So,
what about telling a story? Is that the end of your story?
That's the end of my story.
Because the whole idea you conveyed was, hey, Adam, you might want to go out and shoot three, four, five signs that tell a story.
Yeah,
I didn't read this story.
Really? Well, because the middle one is the name of the newspaper in town.
Oh,
and they have lots of stories.
Okay.
Yeah. And the bakery, they have lots of things that are good to put in your mouth. And the salon, I don't know, I guess you get your hair cut. Who knows?
Yeah.
So.
The end.
The end.
All things you can do in a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, it was just so you wouldn't shoot your mouth off at me. But failed.
Too late.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Power. Let's just skip yours, Adam.
Yeah, mine aren't that good, yeah. So...
Which one do you want to start with? You did shoot a series of two.
I don't know. Whichever one shows up first on your screen there.
Fisherman's Wharf.
Okay.
What
Fisherman's Wharf.
What's going on here?
Well, I was trying to employ strategies that we talked about in the last episode. So we talked about fill flash, and so I was out early morning in Steveston and went down to the Fisherman's Wharf, as you can see in the sign, and took a picture. And the Fisherman's Wharf sign wasn't perfectly lit, so I used my external flash and I lit it. And I should have included the other picture, which I may have deleted, but yeah, I was just playing around with the fill flash, so I was happy how that turned out.
This is
one
of those pictures that, well, first of all, congratulations for getting up so early.
Yeah.
Because I happen to know where this was taken, and I know those shadows mean that you are up at, this is taken about 6:30, probably?
Yeah, 6:45, something like that, yeah.
That's pretty early. I mean, that's not, I mean, it's 6:45 now, so you're not a hero, but I'm just saying to leave the house.
You get bonus points.
You do get bonus points for getting the early magic hour.
We haven't had a lot of sun in Vancouver, and this weekend was beautiful. So I was very excited to get outside of the house when it was nice.
Super. And using the flash, I mean, you basically lighting up the Fisherman's Wharf sign with the flash. Otherwise, it would have basically been probably three stops too dark.
Yeah. And I tried the pop-up, and there just wasn't enough juice, so I had to go with the external.
Absolutely.
And you know, looking at this, sorry, continue.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that I can't tell that you've used the flash. So I think you've definitely succeeded because I can't even see that it's been used.
Exactly what I was going to say. That's the thing that impressed me because I looked at the shot and thought, hey, that's pretty good. And then I checked your EXIF data. And the first thing I saw in the EXIF data was I looked for shutter speed and it said 1/200th. And being the giant nerd that I am, I knew your camera's maximum sync speed was 1/200th.
Yeah.
And normally you wouldn't shoot that at 1/200th. You'd be, up around 1/500th probably.
Yep.
Which said to me that I bet you he used the flash. And lo and behold, you did.
I did.
So that was my first clue that you used it. So this is a great example of how to use fill flash out in the sun.
Thank you.
Yep. And then, Now that I'm looking at it, in the window below the whale watching sign, is that the reflection of your flash?
Maybe. I didn't even notice that. I'm not sure. I'll zoom it in. And yeah, you're right. It is.
Okay, so we can all agree that this is a fail then.
Yeah, I guess. I guess so. I guess that is.
Well, I didn't notice it. So hey, it's only a fail if you notice it.
I didn't notice it either until now. I was just looking for stuff with my. I was being defensive.
I think it is, though. Maybe it's not. It looks kind of bigger than my flash when I'm zoomed right in.
Could be.
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't.
Either way, I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks great. I love the shadows coming across the building there, too. Like the bottom of the whale-watching shack.
Yep.
So it looks really good. That's a good job.
Thank
you. Now, that ties in with your other one, your other whale watching photo.
Yes.
Not using flash.
Right. I didn't use flash for this, and I really just like that sign. I honestly don't think I ever really noticed that sign, but I walked all around Steve's, and I said, wow, I wanted to get something with whales. And there was the little whale watching sign where the Fisherman's Wharf sign was, but it really wasn't the subject matter of the sign in that picture. So I wanted to get something that was primarily whale oriented. So I saw this sign and I grabbed it and I liked it. Cause again, I was just so thrilled that the sky was blue cause it's been nothing but gray for the last week and a half. So I was really excited to take a picture with a blue sky.
Looks great.
Now it would have been even better if you had like a whale jumping out of the water. I think that would have been perfect.
I should have Photoshopped one in.
yeah, but unfortunately, see, where Steveston is where the Fraser River meets the ocean. And so technically these boats are in the river.
Right, yes. So it would be a very confused whale.
It would be a very confused whale. Yeah. Have you ever been whale watching?
I do notice, too, Adam, when I'm looking at the two shots, both of them have an exposure compensation of minus two-thirds.
Yes.
And that seems to work perfectly on your Fisherman's Wharf photo. But it seems to make the whale watching photo slightly underexposed.
Okay, so I should have tuned it up maybe one third.
I think it would have been another opportunity to use the flash because I like the blue sky.
Would I have been able to light it from that distance?
Yes.
I didn't even try because I just looked at the preview, and I was like, oh, it looks pretty good. And when I got it home, I agree with you guys. I think it was a little bit dark, but I was just thinking I couldn't imagine my external lighting it up from, I mean, I'm standing, I don't know, 200 feet away.
You'd be surprised. We'll get into that. That's about like the eighth episode of the flash stuff, but I'll teach you a little trick on how to zoom that in and really get the most out of your flash.
Okay.
Because all I would use the flash on would be the sign. Like, I wouldn't worry about lighting up the ground or the boat or anything like that.
Right. You want your eyes to go to the sign anyhow, yeah. So that's what should really be the perfect point in the photo.
Which you've done with the rule of thirds anyway.
Yes.
Yep.
Adam, you've been paying attention to all the stuff.
I have been. I'm a good student.
Fantastic.
All right, let's move along.
Let's move on. Don, you want to do some stretches? Because this is going to be all about you and macro.
I'm ready for it.
Limber up. Okay, great. Well, Don, tell us what is macro photography?
Macro photography is a lot of fun. That's what it is. It's taking pictures at very, very close distances. I guess the classic term for macro photography is a one-to-one scale. And a lot of people will see this written in brochures or see it online. I haven't met anybody that just right seeing it for the first time has any idea what it even means. So I usually start with that as an explanation. What it means is using any combination of special equipment that I'll get into will allow you to photograph something at life size. And that means, I use film as an example for this. If you take a picture of a dime, any small coin really, and if you're doing this on film, it just as a visual, it's probably a better example. You take that picture, and then you get that piece of film or the roll of film developed, and you take a look at that one frame. And you take that dime, and you put it on that frame, and it's exactly the same size on the frame than it is in reality. And that's what life size means. It's sort of harder to do that comparison with digital, so I fall back to film on that one. But it means that your subject is, a tiny little speck can fill up the entire frame in your photo. This can be, I used coin as an example, but I take photos of anything from flowers and insects. In the wintertime, I do snowflakes, and that works out quite well. So macro photography is just taking pictures of really small things, filling up the entire frame in your camera.
Gotcha. When's a good time to use it? When do you use it?
I use it sometimes actually when I'm looking for inspiration, when I can't find anything that's interesting in a scene. Sometimes I'll just throw my macro lens on and start hunting around in the tiny little details. And you can find some pretty abstract compositions that when you're looking through your camera, you can't normally find, because your brain, your eyes are seeing so many other things that you just can't focus on one little thing. So that's one reason. Another reason is simply you've got a subject, say a flower or an insect, and you want to make the story, the photo, about that, about whatever that, you know, maybe it's a caterpillar eating a leaf, if that makes a good story, or if it's the sun backlighting a flower in the early morning with dew on it. If you're trying to tell a story of something that's very small, it's hard to do it from a great distance, or if you've got a lot of other clutter in the background, so you want to get right in close.
Right. Essentially filling the frame.
Filling the frame with a very small subject.
Gotcha.
And it's not for everything. I'd love to use that style of photography in more things than I do, but after a while, you run out of stories that you can tell with it. And your creativity, it's a nice tool to have in your bag. And I find that, especially in the wintertime when I've got nothing to photograph, or I just don't have the time, I can take 2 feet out of my door and photograph some snowflakes in the morning for about 20 minutes before I start my day. And that's a wonderful way to start my creative juices flowing.
Great. Is the spider shot that you sent us, is that on your website?
It's not on my the website that I mentioned earlier, because that's where I sell prints.
Okay.
And I don't think anybody wants to buy a print of a giant spider.
Yeah, I peed a little when I saw that one.
Yes, it's not there. But that was actually, that spider I found on a boardroom table when I was working in an office, and I had my camera with me, so I just grabbed my camera gear and I terrorized that spider for about 5 minutes until I finally got the shot, blinding him with the light of 1,000 suns with every exposure to try and get him. Jumping spiders are interesting because whenever I got close enough to the little guy, he would jump onto my lens.
Really?
So it took a while to actually get him in focus without him actually launching towards my camera.
It was a jumping spider.
Jumping spider.
This is
a daring jumping spider for the actual name.
A berry jumping spider?
Daring jumping spider.
This is
only available in Barrie, Ontario.
Yeah, hence the name.
Yes.
Jumping spider. Yeah.
So lenses. I want to know because. Do you have multiple macro lenses, or do you have one specific lens that you use most of the time?
I have one macro lens that I use, and it's quite a specialty beast. It's not your standard macro lens. So I'll start with the standard ones, and then I'll tell you what I use.
Okay.
Macro lenses, every company makes them. Whether you're shooting Canon or Nikon, they each make their own. So does everybody else, and Sigma makes quite a few as well. It's a pretty good general purpose lens in most cases, because it'll focus to infinity, so you know, mountains in the background and whatnot, all the way up to that 1-to-1 life size that I was talking about earlier. So it's a great prime lens, and I know that you talked about prime lenses recently. Oftentimes they'll open up to about f/2.8, so not as wide as some, but they're quite versatile, especially in low light. But the big thing about these lenses is they can get in to, say, a working distance. That means how close you are to your subject. About 10 centimeters or so, on average.
Versus a normal lens going to get?
I mean, you might be working with a couple feet at that point.
Right.
Depending on the lens. All lenses are going to be a little bit different. For example, like I've got... a fisheye lens, which is a whole other topic, but it can focus really, really close to a subject, whereas my 50mm lens can't.
Right.
It all depends on the technology that's in the lens. None of those can do macro photography. They can't magnify on the same scale. Now, you don't need, and this is a very important thing, you don't need a macro lens to do macro photography. You can. There's a couple of other things that you can do in order to get that effect. If you've got a 50mm f/1.8 lens, I always recommend those to people, and I'm sure most photographers that are at least trying to learn a little bit more will have one as well. You can take that lens and, believe it or not, hold it backwards in front of your camera, and that will get you pretty close to macro distances without having to do anything fancy. And they sell little adapters on eBay. I think they cost about $5 or so, that will allow you to do that with a perfect light seal. So it's got a mount on one side and a screw on the other so that it'll physically pair the two together. You're in full manual mode, so you kind of have to know what you're doing, but you can do it for $5, so I don't see why it's why you wouldn't play around and experiment with it.
I'm going to, too. Yeah. Oh, actually, you go ahead, Adam, and you let me know how it goes.
Okay.
It's $5. I'll borrow yours for $5.
I'll mail it to Germany. Yeah. It cost me $35.
So using that that simple technique of taking a lens you've already got and flipping it around can be a great little introduction to it if you don't want to spend the money on a macro lens. Because, to be honest, macro lenses are expensive. In Canada, I think the cheapest ones you can get started around $600 or $700, and they go up from there. Mine cost $1,300, I think.
Oh, wow.
And they go up even higher than that. Some of them will be $1,500, $1,800. So... again, with any lens, there's sort of a scale that you can go up. But another really fun thing that you can do, this will keep your camera working normally so that you can use all your automatic exposure and whatnot, is you can use what's called a close-up lens, which is it's actually a filter. And it has optics in it that mimic almost exactly what reading glasses do. So if you've got a pair of reading glasses, you can even take that reading glass and stick it in front of your camera and get the same effect. Or you can pay for the proper lens to use with your camera. But that's all it's doing. And the quality isn't that great. I mean, you lose some of your sharpness. And I don't know if you've talked about terms like chromatic aberration on your show yet. But you get what's called color fringing, where if you've got high contrast edges, you see like the edges glowing purple or blue. And so it's not the best solution, but again, it's cheap. You can get them for not too much, $20 or $30 for a cheap one on eBay to play around with. So there's a lot of ways to really get into it without spending a lot of money.
I've actually taken using a similar process to that with my old point and shoot using sunglasses as an ND filter. So
you know what? That works too. And if they're polarized sunglasses, then it'll work, you know, it'll cut out reflections for you as well.
Yep. That's a lot of fun. So yeah. What lens do you use? What macro lens do you have?
I have that. Canon has a very special lens, and it is their MPE 65 millimeter macro lens, and it's manual focus. It doesn't focus, period, actually. You have to move closer or farther away from your subject to actually get it into focus. And it will start at 1:1 life size.
Okay.
And go to 5:1 life size. So it gets 5 times closer than your average macro lens. It can't focus to infinity. So you have to be using it for up-close stuff. You can't use it as a general-purpose lens.
Gotcha.
It's just for macro. But because of the scale that it can get, I've taken photos, especially recently. There's some on my blog that I had taken of flowers, and I got up close into some pollen. And I was able to measure the scale of this pollen, and it's really easy to do. You just take a picture of whatever you're taking a photo of, and then you take a picture of a ruler, and then you can match the two up afterwards.
Right.
They ended up being 0.07 millimeters in length.
Wow.
Which I think that's 70 microns or something. In comparison, like the cell of an onion, like the epidermis of an onion, is about 350 microns.
Okay.
So it's quite a bit smaller than that. I use that as an example because as a kid with my little microscope, I'd usually slice little bits of vegetables off and look at them under microscope slides, and I'd see that sort of stuff and thought it was cool. So now I'm like a kid in a candy store when I find that sort of stuff. And it's a lot of fun when you get in on that scale. It's things that you can't see with your own eyes, so it brings a whole a different world of photography. It's not going to win any awards. It's not going to be something that you want to frame on the wall, but it's got a certain fascination to it that I just want to keep doing.
Yeah, macro photography in general, it is a whole new world, and I've used it a little bit. I haven't used a whole lot of it, and my experience was with video. We shot part of the invisible camera with
right.
100-millimeter macro lens, and we got a lot of those kind of cool, very close-up product shots with it. And it was
that's another lens that I've used extensively. That's the Canon 100mm, right?
Yep.
And that's a fantastic lens. And most macro lenses are going to be around that focal length. 60 to 100 is the typical standard. Some of them will go a little bit farther. Canon makes one up to 180mm. And focal length can be important too. If you're photographing a subject that's skittish, like a damselfly or a dragonfly, you can't get close to them. They'll fly away.
Right.
So you need to have a lens that has a longer focal length in order to still get that one-to-one magnification. So they're still filling the frame, but you're farther away from them. So there's a time and a place for every type of a lens. Just those ones that have the bigger focal lengths cost a lot more.
I guess so. Yeah, the 100 millimeter, I was surprised. It wasn't as expensive as I thought it would be.
No, and you know, I think Canon has fixed that. They've re-released it as an L-series lens with an image stabilizer in it. I don't know if you can get the non-stabilized one anymore. I hope you still can, because it's a fantastic lens, but they've upped the ante on that one last year.
So what are those costing approximately?
Let's see. Well, when I bought mine, I think it was around 800 or so.
Okay.
I'm sure that if you find them online, you can get great deals. And I'm a huge advocate if you can find something from a trusted source that's used, you can get it at an even better price too.
Oh, for sure.
And the new one with the stabilizer, I think the cost just about doubles on it. So.
Oh wow. What? I had a question written down. Can I only use it if I get a macro lens, like say the 100?
Mm-hmm.
Can I only use it for macro? Are there any other? Can it be a walking around lens?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, a lot of people will use a macro lens as a long range portrait lens. Some wedding photographers are well known to do that too, because you're not in anybody's face. You can take that shot from a distance. It's still fairly a wide aperture, so you can get a very blurry background, which is, I guess, a good thing for that type of photography. And it lets in a lot of light. I think, when was it? It was January of last year. I went to a local provincial park, Springwater Provincial Park, and they've got some caged animals. So I was able to, and maybe this is a topic for another show, but I was able to shoot through the fences and have the fences completely disappear, because partly due to my focal length and because of the very wide aperture.
Right.
So I was able to get some pictures of wolves howling with my macro lens. You can use it for just about anything. You're not limited.
Yeah, we shot some portraits with it on the same day that we shot the video, and it provides kind of like a it's a, hard to describe, because it's not really like a blur, but it's a nice kind of softening of the facial features.
Yeah, and I find that for any type of portrait, it's mostly a desirable feature. I mean, sometimes you want to really get the grit and the wrinkles, but most people don't prefer that. So,
no, if you're shooting a White Diamonds ad, you want to really shoot it through some cheesecloth.
Exactly.
So, and great. What sort of challenges does macro, like, for more specifically, what kind of depth of field can you expect?
Oh, okay. Yeah. When challenge. You said challenges, I was about to mention depth of field, because that is a huge one, and it's always a battle. Depth of field is controlled, as you know, by your aperture. So the wider your aperture, the shallower your depth of field. With macro photography, another thing that comes into play with depth of field is the distance from your subject. The closer you are to your subject, and this applies in general to photography, the closer you are to your subject, the shallower your depth of field becomes, even at any given aperture. And you can test this pretty easily. If you move up really close to a subject, all the camera settings the same, and take a picture, mm-hmm. and you move all the way back and take the same picture, you'll notice a huge difference in your depth of field. So when you're getting up close, oftentimes with the scale that I'm at, my depth of field is less than a millimeter.
Right.
And it gets very difficult to get your entire subject in focus at that scale. Typical macro work might be a little bit wider than that, but it's still very difficult. So one of the biggest things that I say when you're trying to start taking pictures up close, take your camera out of autofocus. Because oftentimes your autofocus in your camera will pick one part of the photo, and if it's ever so slightly off, then the whole feel of your photo is wrong. So what I do is I put it into manual focus, and if I want to get as close as possible, then I take the focusing of the camera, and usually you'll be able to see somewhere on the camera where it goes to infinity and where it goes to its closest. I spin it all the way to its closest, and then I physically move the camera forward and back from the subject, and that's how I get it in focus, and that works reliably.
They have, you know, exposure bracketing, and they have white balance bracketing in these cameras. I would love in the future if they kind of toned down the megapixel arrays and moved into focus bracketing.
Yeah, and focus bracketing, there's some expensive gear that you can get that'll do this.
Yeah.
But it's only for, I mean, I don't even have it, and I can get by, but it's only for those that are really serious and really have deep pockets. Having that feature in the camera would be fantastic. I did some product photography shots. I think I sent you one of my macro setup just for fun.
Yep.
And that was three photos that I had to take three separate photos and then merge them together in Photoshop. In order to get it all in focus.
Right.
And that's for a relatively big subject, my camera. When you're dealing with photos on a very small scale, like some of my snowflakes, I might have to take that photo and I can get a tiny little sliver of it in focus. So then I have to sort of move myself and sway back and forth. I don't use a tripod for this, especially not for snowflakes, because by the time I get the tripod set up, it would have blown away. But I sort of sway back and forth, and I might take 40 shots of the same snowflake. Okay. And then afterwards, I go I guess I use Lightroom for this, and I find every point in focus in at least one photograph,
mm-hmm.
and I merge those together. Photoshop has a delightful little feature called focus stacking, and it will allow me to have the most in-focus area of a whole bunch of different photos combined into one.
Wow.
And some of my macro shots combine up to, I think, 24 was my biggest. But, I mean, I can go crazy and go more, but 24, I think, has been my biggest to this point. And it's a challenge. It is a huge challenge and a lot of work. I mean, for each of those photos that I have to sit there and focus stack together, I mean, that might take me an hour.
Hello, Grandma.
Sometimes less, but... Yeah, exactly. Another phone call home.
Yeah. Wow. What's preventing me from just basically, if I want to take a macro shot without going hog wild and doing the 24 and stacking and all that, but I want to take a nice close-up shot of a flower, for instance.
Okay, so here's another challenge.
Okay.
Is when you're getting into that flower and you want to take a photo and you want to have it all in focus, you're going to want to have your aperture fairly small.
Yeah.
If you have it small to, say, around f/16, not a lot of light is going to be coming into your lens. And if you don't have a lot of light coming into your lens, you're going to have a relatively long shutter speed. If you're taking a picture of a flower and you're 10 feet away and it moves a fraction of an inch, you're not really going to notice. But if you're filling the frame with that flower and it moves a fraction of an inch, it might be completely out of the frame by the time you're finished taking the shot.
Right.
So having a slow shutter speed really doesn't equate so well when you're trying to do the macro photography. You'll find that you get a lot of blurry results right off the bat. So to combat that challenge, you use a flash. But you can't just use any flash to complicate it further, because the flash on the top of your camera, the little pop-up flash, isn't going to light a subject that's an inch in front of your lens. The light's just not going to hit it. So any ideas what you do?
Adam?
No idea.
Well, I have an idea. I cheated. I actually know what a ring flash is.
Okay.
Because everybody's shooting video with them now with a ring, not a flash, but a ring light.
Right. And what a ring light is, Alan, you tell the audience.
Adam, have you ever seen any of the ESPN 30 for 30?
Yes.
I forget which episode it was. I think it was... one of the 30 for 30s, they shot every interview. It was the Little League one. Little Big Men, did you see that one?
No, I didn't see that one.
When you check it out, look at the interviews of all the guys who, they're much older now. They went to the Little League World Series like 20 years ago or something like that. Maybe more than that. And all the interviews are shot with a ring light. You can kind of see, it's a kind of a strange lighting setup. And if you look in the reflection of their eyes, you can see the ring reflected.
Uh-huh.
So what it is essentially is they've moved the flash, in this case a flash, forward, and it's a ring basically circling the very front element of the lens.
Exactly, because that's where the light needs to be in that particular photo. Oftentimes ring flashes will have two banks of light, so one on the left and one on the right, which you can spin it around and have it on the top or the bottom. And the Flash will have the ability, just right in the little menu, to control the output. So you can have one of them twice as bright as the other, or even more. So you can have just a kiss of light on one side and a whole lot on the other if you want to play around with shadows and give a deeper feeling to the photo so the lighting isn't flat. They're quite useful little things, but they're not cheap. Again, it's one of those things that gets a little bit expensive. There's a couple of easy ways around that. If you want to go El Cheapo, like the $5 adapter setup, then you can just get yourself a little white card and sort of wrap that around your flash output, angling it down onto your subject. That helps a little bit. It's not going to be any solution that's going to win awards, but it doesn't cost you anything to play around with it if you're having troubles.
Right.
Beyond that, if you've got an external flash, so like something that will sit on top of your camera, you can buy an off-camera shoe cord. So it sits in your hand, effectively, and you can position that anywhere around the subject that you want. Any angle, it's just connected to your camera with a cord. And the beautiful thing about that is it's still going to be your ETTL or your ITTL like you were talking about last week. So it's going to get your proper exposure. And to further that idea, when I'm shooting macro work, I'm in manual mode the entire time.
Right.
Because I want to choose my aperture. I don't want that to change. I want my ISO to be locked in because I want to be sure that I'm getting the proper quality. And I want my shutter speed to be pretty fast because, you know, my subject might be moving around. I'm locking all of that in, but I still don't have to worry about my exposure because there's a fourth element in there. The ETTL or ITTL of the flash will figure out how much light is needed to fill the subject full of light. In any other type of photography, you normally can't do that because your flash might not be the only light source in your entire setup. But in macro photography, especially when you're only dealing with one flash, that tiny little flash head will fill the entire frame full of light. So it's a fun little way to get used to manual controls by not actually having to worry about it.
Nice. I've had that off-camera flash cord in my hand in the camera store about six different times, and I've never pulled the trigger buying it because, wow, are they expensive.
They are. I think that the Canon one, which reaches like 3 feet or less at its full extension, cost me like $150.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not cheap. And it seems like it's pretty simple. Yeah, if you search online, you can find some third-party manufacturers that are making them, but you have to be sure that it does transmit the through-the-lens metering information because some of them don't.
Yes.
Some of them, well, yeah, you think you're getting a great deal, but then your flash is only operating in manual mode, and that really adds another layer of confusion to you.
It does defeat the purpose at that point, but I've really wanted to have one of those cords. And
right.
Again, at $150, I think I'll just stick with my wireless remotes and do it manually.
You know, I bought one and I hadn't used it for a long time until I started to photograph water droplets.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a certain effect that you get with a ring flash that sometimes can be undesirable. Mm. Like you had mentioned, you get a reflection of your light source in a water droplet. And if your light source is spherical, then it can kind of take away from the beauty of whatever you're seeing in that, especially if you're trying to focus on a reflection.
Right.
And then you've got this big, bold white circle that's sort of staring back at you, especially if there's more than one water droplet. Or in the case of that spider that I sent you, all of that, those eight eyes have that big circular reflection staring back at you. I guess it can work in some cases, but I'd rather have an alternative.
I love it in that spider case. In that spider shot, it's because you had told me before that you were going to Photoshop it out.
I did. I tried, and the photo just looked lifeless because it didn't have a catchlight in the eyes. And it's amazing how much a tiny little catchlight can liven up a photo, even of a spider.
Oh, absolutely! It looked great. I knew immediately it was a ring light, but it didn't matter to me. It just looks fantastic.
Right. I've taken some photos of some water droplets and having flowers reflected in those water droplets. And you don't want a distracting reflection in those shots.
No.
So there's a time and a place for it. And that's when I used, for the first time reliably, my off-camera shoe cord with my flash. And I was directly positioning my light where I wanted it without using the ring flash. And it worked well.
Nice. Well, that's all you need to know about macro. No,
is it?
No, absolutely not. That's the scratching the surface.
Yeah, you know what? You can go into all sorts of crazy details. One thing that I haven't covered, and it's a good way to get more out of an existing macro lens, because some people, as soon as they get a macro lens, they get bit by that bug, metaphorically speaking. And you want to get closer. You want to get deeper into whatever that subject is. And without having to spend money on an extra lens to do it, you can buy a set of extension tubes. And these will actually work in any lens to get you closer to your subject. Macro lenses will get you an even closer than that life-size, one-to-one life-size that I had mentioned earlier. And basically what they're doing is shifting the focus. So if you've got a macro lens that can focus out to the mountains and then all the way into your one-to-one life-size, extension tubes will sit in between the lens and the camera. They're hollow tubes. The good ones, I think Kenko makes the most universally used set. And this set of extension tubes will carry all the focusing stuff and the metering information and whatnot. So you're still in your automatic world. But what it does is it shifts your focus closer to the front element. It means now that you can't focus on the mountains in the background. You can still focus fairly far, but not quite as far. And if that's your drawback, then your benefit is that you can now get even closer to your subjects. So I think a set of those costs between $200 and $300. So they're not cheap either, but they're a lot cheaper than buying a special lens to get you even closer in.
For sure. Yeah, I haven't checked them out yet, but I was meaning to give one a try. So
as soon as you dip your feet into the water of macro photography, expect to spend money.
Yeah, well, that's true of everything, I think.
Yeah.
So, fantastic. Well, thanks for scratching the surface with us.
Ah, happy to do it.
That's Adam, you still there?
Yeah, oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
He's mesmerized. Deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's me most of the time.
So, let's go into next week's photo challenge.
All right.
This one was suggested to us by a listener. As I mentioned before, I think I briefly mentioned before, but want to reiterate that every week's photo challenge is open to any and all participants. So anyone who wants to submit their photos are welcome to. We even, by popular request, set up a Flickr site. And there's a Flickr, we have our own Flickr site and discussion forum, and you can submit your photos in there. The link to that is on our main twohosers.com website. You can see this little Flickr button has been added. So this week's photo challenge was suggested to us by Eric. You think I'd get this name better because it sounds German to me. Eric Heinrich from, maybe they call it Heinrich. I don't know how they pronounce it in North America.
I'd say Heinrich.
Heinrich. Okay.
Yeah.
From Parma.
I concur.
From Parma, Ohio. And he actually suggested, because we talked about it last week, to take a picture in the direct sunlight with a pop-up flash. Well, he didn't say pop-up flash. I added that part. He said fill flash.
If he said fill flash, then I'll just resubmit my photo from this week.
That's right. You're also a go-getter. That's the awesome. So, no, I remember he submitted that. I knew you had already submitted your photo, so I'm going to change it to make it a little bit more difficult on you, and it's going to be with the pop-up flash.
Okay.
Because a lot of our listeners are probably have yet to purchase an external flash.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. And what about, can I add something to that?
Yep.
And what about make the picture be of a person? Just because, you know, the idea of a lot of times you get your subject outside and they got a little bit of shadow on their face, and like we were talking about earlier, trying to, you know, get their eyes lit or get their face, some of those shadows out of there. Why don't we make that picture of a person?
Done.
All right.
I was going to fight you on that just to, you know, basically show that I'm the alpha male on this program. But that was a little bit selfish.
Right. Yeah.
I agree. So it's going to be of a person. So what's, okay. before we leave from there, what's one little hint? What if you're using your pop-up flash in the daylight, what kind of challenge can you expect?
The range on that flash isn't very good, so you're probably going to have to be relatively close to your subject.
Exactly. So there you go. That's it. That's this week's challenge, and we'll post them up on Flickr and the site as usual. And anybody else who wants to participate, we enjoy it. We welcome.
And if Barry O, if you're visiting Vancouver, British Columbia, anytime soon, I'd love to get my picture of Barry O for this challenge.
Or Tiger Chung Lee. Don't limit yourself to Barry O.
Or Barry Horowitz. Sure. He had the big five on the back of his sparkly jacket, and he used to pat himself on the back. That was Barry Horowitz's gimmick.
Fantastic. Yeah. Paid off. Now when you buy the car from him, he tells you that story. I'm sorry, Barry Horowitz. Probably not listening.
Probably not.
So great. That brings us to the end of the show. Where let's start with Don. Where can people find you, Don?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Doncom, DONKOM. And it's also my website, doncom.ca. I post a little bit more frequently on my blog. I don't expect anybody to know how to spell my last name, so you can find the link to that at the top of my my website that I just mentioned. So you can find me there.
Super. And on your main site, I meant to mention this earlier, you have, we'll call it an iconic photo. It's your main photo, your big one, I think, is the Canada flag photo.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Thank you.
It's if you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. Go check it out on Don's website. And if you haven't seen it, I think you're going to see it places.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's the kind of, well, we don't get that much snow on the West Coast, but it's the kind of thing that I thought, man, I wish I'd done that. So,
no, I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, yeah, how did you think of that? I mean, it's such a simple idea. For anybody that hasn't seen it, go see it. I'm not going to describe it. I want you to be curious and go and check it out. But it's one of those moments where you say to yourself, why didn't I think of that? And I'm glad that I did.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks fantastic. And I think people are going to see it places without even knowing it. I think it's going to start showing up places. So.
I hope so.
Yeah. Adam, where can we find you?
SchwartzChronicles.com.
Blam.
And Alan, how about yourself?
Keeping it simple. As always, you can find all of us at twohosers.com, at twohosers at Twitter. You can find my stuff at alanattridge.com or .de if you're in Germany. They're both the same site. You can access them from anywhere. And that's about it. I did have a note here to mention the Flickr site again, so please check out the Flickr site. And that's it. So, Adam, why don't you take us home?
For all of you who have sat through this entire episode, feel free to go out there and make better pictures.